Man defined. In order to define man, some of the thoughts that have occurred can be divided into five categories. The first category is named basic terms, and they include the five items: what, where, when, how, and whom. The second category are the seven terms for God: mind, spirit, soul, principle, which includes system and structure, life, truth, love, which includes plan and design. The third category are the levels, as defined by Mary Baker Eddy on page 115 of Science and Health, the textbook of Christian Science. The four levels from highest to lowest are Word, Christ, Christianity, Science. The fourth category are some other basic terms, which include five items, which are termed relationships, thoughts, speech, actions, and responses. And the fifth and final category is the results. One might think of this as an extractor, such as one would use in putting in fruits and vegetables in order to make something that includes all of its components. And that's exactly what man is. Man includes all of its components, as does really everything. But in this particular case, we're talking about God's highest idea, as the Bible states. In Genesis chapter 1, it states that God gave man dominion over all the earth. In fact, he goes on to say, over everything. So therefore, among the tangible things, man is king, but is reportable to the big boss, which is God. Stanley Larkin, which is one of the principals that was involved in the End Time organization, his mother founded it, and he said, think of your body as a servant. Now, he was basically thinking of the physical body, whereby one says, okay, do this, do that, and so forth. Put one foot before the other one as you walk, for example. Or go do this errand. Or type up this document. Or whatever the activity may be, it is carried out by a physical structure that is commanded by the thoughts of the instructor, the one that is in charge. Obviously, in the real world, God is the one in charge of everything and everyone. But he delegated things to man, but man must comply with the laws of the boss. Otherwise, he gets kicked out. He's no longer in heaven. In fact, he's no longer in reality. For heaven is the only kingdom that is real. If one is going to think about what is man, they have to consider all of the spiritual avenues which are part of the entire map, the entire plan, the entire design, the entire structure, the entire system. After all, where does man receive his intelligence, if he is reflecting any? There's only one source, and that is the infinite, incorporeal, divine, and supreme mind. And within mind, it is the omniscience of mind that provides the mind which is the intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. How about creative ability? That's from mind. How about action? That's from mind. How about capacity, functionality, facility, capability? Everything along that line is from mind, not from an individual. The individual is merely a reflection of what comes from the boss. Spirit is the substance of man. It's flawless, transparent, and therefore it reflects out into the universe of thought. Soul is the spiritual sense of man. Spiritual because the only substance is spirit. And as already mentioned, principle is the system and structure, and it is always in balance and always in harmony. Life is the activity of man. That is the activity of exercising the qualities of God. Truth, that is the path that one must stay on in order to be living the facts of God. It includes consciousness and motive, because God is always conscious of the truth, because God is conscious of itself. And God is truth. Motive is a part of consciousness. In fact, motive drives actions, thoughts, and speech. Love, of course, is the seventh, and that is the plan and design of everything in existence. Category 3 was the levels, and those are defined as the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. From page 115, it can be seen that science means Christian Science, and it is the lowest level. In fact, it begins at depravity, because it's based on the human as it is defined by the material world, and that is the thing that we need to reform or transform or exchange to higher levels. Christianity is living the facts about God and facing whatever comes our way and translating it. If we're able to do that successfully, then we're able to demonstrate the truth. Truth is the healer, and we can demonstrate it if we are focusing on the Word, which is the facts about God, and the Christ, which is the interpretation or translation of whatever comes our way. And of course, the Word, as mentioned, are the facts about God. Before we can even think about understanding anything regarding the facts about God, we have to come to a point in our life where we have tried time and time again living the life whereby there is life, truth, and intelligence in matter, in our thought, until we finally realize, I'm getting nowhere. There's no lasting fulfillment from this method of living. I want to make a change. In fact, you are so disgusted that you have a burning desire to make a change. And that burning desire is what opens the door to start understanding the terms about God, which is the Word. And those are the seven that have already been discussed. The fourth category are some other basic things which are really included in what's already been discussed, but they mentioned, they're worth mentioning here. And those are the five items that are termed as relationships, thoughts, speech, actions, and responses. In other words, how are we going to respond to whatever comes our way? Are we going to sift it through the items that have already been discussed, the categories, and make sure that we filter out anything which is ungodly? That is spirit, because spirit is pureness. Spirit is flawless. Spirit is the only substance. So we don't even want anything to get to the front door of our consciousness unless we have filtered it absolutely without doubt to strain out anything that is unlike God. And the fifth category is a one word called results. And this could be defined as our life. What is our life going to be? If we think about all of these other four categories and live them, then we will have a life that will be one of love, which is completeness and wholeness and fulfillment. And love, which also represents plan and design, will permeate everything in our life. It will be a direct influence on all thought, speech, and action, on all intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. In other words, it's an overall filter. It's like putting lubricant in a set of gears that are made out of some kind of a clanging metal when they mesh together, such as iron or steel. And if we have lubricant in there, that will remove the noise. And we will then have the sound of music. Things working together. The harmony that would be produced and bring forth a product of spirit, a product without limitation, a product that reflects the qualities of God. Think of it as being a customer service department. You have somebody that comes in with a problem. What is your job? Well, what is the title of the department? Customer satisfaction or customer service. It's not a self-service department. It's not say, well, forget it. You go work it out yourself. No, you are the love. You are the ointment. You are the plan and design that lets all the gears come together and operate smoothly. By the way, my dad was in business his entire adult life, and he said the best advertising in the world that money can't even buy is a satisfied customer. Because that satisfied customer, if he refers to you in talking with someone else, he's going to be talking from conviction. He is absolutely convinced that you dealt with him in a very professional manner and brought full satisfaction to his thought. Doesn't matter what it was to your thought. Doesn't matter how much you thought you had to give to get that satisfaction. The point is, you're trying to work for an equilibrium where he is happy, because that is your job. Customer service, customer satisfaction, 100% guaranteed satisfaction. That's your job. And your job is done when you have provided it. Doesn't matter what it takes to do it, you've got to do it. Now, obviously, you have to be honest. You have to be having integrity In other words, if you've got somebody that's trying to steal and he's coming in to have you approve that his theft is okay, well, that's a different story. Both parties need to be honest. They need to be working from a foundation of integrity, of the golden rule. One could even ask their customer or their client, if you were me, is this what you think would make the other party happy? Is this what you think is right for the company? Is it an honest approach? Is it looking at honesty from both sides? Is it following the golden rule? If this recording included all the detail of all five of these categories, it would be a very long recording. As a matter of fact, it would probably have to be broken into several parts. But the purpose of this is to get an overall definition of what man is. Mary Baker Eddy defines man in 746 references just in Science and Health. The Bible mentions man 2,427 times. The other writings of Mary Baker Eddy have 756 references on the topic of man. On page 591, which is a part of the glossary, she states that man is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Well, that's certainly a very significant statement, the full representation of mind. If we're going to be reflecting man in its wholeness, we've really got our work cut out for us. By the time we demonstrate the real definition of man, we're going to be walking on water. There are three introductory quotes to the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. And they are as follows. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. That's from Jesus, and it's quoted by John, chapter 8, verse 32. The second one is from Shakespeare. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the third one is from Mary Baker Eddy. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. If we think about this as being the three steps to success, or really two steps, first is, we have to know what truth is. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. What is truth? What is the truth about anything that is real? And of course, the boss is the head of the whole shooting match. The seven terms for God are a wonderful place to begin to figure out what is truth. And then Shakespeare gives us wisdom that's a real treasure. There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What is in our thoughts? Because our experience is a projection of our thoughts. Are we doing the filtering? Mr. Winslow, who wrote four books, and each one of them is on God. The first one is, let God do it. The second one is, God can do it. The third one is, God will do it. And the fourth one is, God is doing it. So if one wants to look at love, which is the wholeness, and put those four together, everything is in accordance with Genesis 1 of the Bible, in which God already created everything. And Mary Baker Eddy defines that as not being in the beginning, but in the only creation there is, everything is already done. Think of it as a movie of spirit and spiritual ideas. Which part of the movie do you want to examine? It's already done. What do you want to learn about? What do you want to improve your understanding on? Because it's already finished, you can study any part of it. Or you can jump over to the belief that life, truth, and intelligence is in matter, mortal mind, money, cars, houses, wine, women, and whatever the rest of it is. That is the dance of mortal mind. And the only thing you can be guaranteed of gaining from that is a tremendous backsliding over to the edge. Probably heard the term the black hole. Well, that's the biggest black hole that anyone could ever imagine. In fact, beyond what you can imagine. Hell is like heaven compared to that black hole. We've all felt like we've been in it at one time or another, wondering, is the daylight ever going to come? We have to get to that point, probably, in order before we can start thinking about what God is. Because we have to be so disgusted with relying on what we thought was reality, with life, truth, and intelligence in matter, mortal mind, and everything else that was mentioned, and more. Before we're ready to be so disgusted that we will do anything to start on the path of truth. But the beauty about man is that when we realize that man is the image and likeness of God, and man is the highest idea of God, and that man is in charge of his own experience, not God. God has nothing to do with it. God already created everything that there is. It's there. It's an individual decision on whether you want to participate, whether or not you want the benefits of spirit or matter, of immortal mind, which is incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite, or mortal mind, which is a direct ticket to the crevice, the black hole. Doesn't matter what it may look like as you're going down, you're probably not even going to be conscious of what's going on. You will be blind to everything that's going on around you, including everything that is directly influencing your black path to the black hole. You will be unaware of it. You will be hypocritical but don't even know it. Because the so-called mortal mind rationalizes everything that it does. It is very quick to accept success, but it never accepts defeat. Because it rationalizes everything that it did, and it has an ego without limit. Dale Carnegie, one of the most successful trainers in personal success. By the way, he had a very fine assessment of Mary Baker Eddy. It's in his book called Think and Grow Rich. I believe that's the book that it's in. He wrote a number of books. But he said, be very careful about criticizing anyone, because tomorrow you may be enlightened and agree with the one that you were in direct conflict with yesterday. He also recommended that when you're eating, to get up from the table before you're full. And of course, we know why that is the reason. I mean, we know why that is a good thing to do. Because you don't even know how you're going to feel once all the food that you've put in the top gets down into your stomach. Just think about eating at a big Thanksgiving Day feast with your family and friends. Or going to a smorgasbord in a delightful place that is offering everything you can imagine for a fixed price. So you eat because it tastes so good. And then you eat some more. Then you eat some more. And oh, I didn't even go over to the dessert department yet. So you go over there and you bring back three or four desserts. Would you be doing that at home? Of course not. Well, normally one would not. They would eat more normal at home. But if you've got a fixed price at a smorgasbord, you're going to probably totally forget about reason, balance, intelligence, or anything else that is going to give you a discipline to do what you should be doing instead of believing that life, truth, and intelligence is in delicious food. You're going to think that's it. That's the end. This is my last, you know, you'll think you're on the Last Supper with Jesus, and you're going to eat all you can. Unfortunately, they didn't eat very much because they all betrayed, except for John, they all betrayed Jesus. In fact, Peter, James, and John, when he went up on the mountain, he asked them to watch while he went up further by himself. He came back, and as you know, he found them all asleep, all three of them. Even John, who was the only disciple that ended up being loyal, the only one that showed up at his cross at the trial and was exiled out to the island of Patmos, where Jesus came back to him in the flesh and dictated the book of Revelation. That's all documented by Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He was a doctor of chemistry, a perfect background for Christian science, because chemistry is exactly what Christian science is about. It's the chemistry of our thought, the chemistry of all thinking, the chemistry of our actions, our speech. It's the filter at the beginning when we're first introduced to a thought. Oh, I started to mention about Wentworth Winslow. He said, think of yourself as being in a room with a telephone that is ringing its head off and a radio that is just broadcasting from station KOG, which is Kingdom of God. Although in this day and age, it's probably not a radio, but some other electronic device. And the telephone is probably a cell phone. Or maybe it's an instant messaging service. Or maybe it's some cable TV station, if we're foolish enough to watch mainstream media, where they all say exactly the same thing. In fact, the psychology of that, it's a psyop. In other words, if you hear the same thing often enough, you involuntarily believe it to be true. one of the longest term people in Congress, said this is one way to get it done. She said, take a person that you absolutely want to defeat, whatever it is, whether it's an election coming up or whether it's a bill proposed in Congress that the other one is proposing, whatever. And she says, absolutely fabricate something about that person and then give it to the mainstream media news and have them publish it, you know, announce it on their night show or whatever, and have them indicate that it's from an unnamed source that they must keep secret, which is the standard thing for journalism. And then the individual that fabricated the lie uses the mainstream media as their authority on saying it's true. So it's a big circle. We have the video of it on the website. By the way, one of our three-letter agencies has a plan. In fact, it was started back in the 1950s, maybe before that. It was called their disinformation program. It's under another name. That is also on the website, the complete statement directly from the author, who was the director of the three-letter agency. And they said, when we believe our information program is about complete, and it will be when everyone believes whatever is false to be true. That's paraphrasing. Imagine, we're paying taxes for our government to deceive us. And when they think the entire public believes something that is false, then they have accomplished their goal. Well, we've experienced some things recently. One of them is called a PANDEMIC, and that was all false. Soon after it came out, there was a research report done that indicated that 94% of what was published was false. In other words, only 4% of the people supposedly caught whatever they think it was. So whatever number they were reporting, deduct 94% of that number, and the 6% is what really, even according to their own figures, was true. And of course, in Christian Science, we study that there's no life, truth, and intelligence in matter. That means disease, sin, or death. That's what we strive to understand, to get a better understanding. Mary Baker Eddy says, infinite progression is concrete being. We're on that path where we're striving for infinite progression. Getting back to Mr. Winslow, I still didn't finish the story. So imagine yourself in a room that has the phone ringing its head off and a radio or a cell phone or MSM media, whatever, that is announcing something instead of the phone, because people don't use typical phones that much. But it's ringing its head off. It's keep saying the same thing over and over and over and over. We have an individual decision. Do we want to pick up the phone? Do we want to listen to what the mainstream media is saying? Or do we want to listen to the truth, which is, in this example, was a radio. This was written, you know, 75 years ago or more, probably 100 years ago. We have it. It's in those four books that I mentioned, the titles to. But it's only announcing one way. You can't talk to it. I mean, you can talk to it, but it doesn't hear you, because it's God. It's God's qualities that are being announced. Imagine somebody just reading off God's qualities. You can't change it. You can talk to it. You can accept it. You can reject it. But you can't change it. It's there. And it's just one-way communication. It's not duplex, like the telephone. It is simplex. The communication goes one way, from God to whoever is listening. Because it's truth that is always true. It's there. Do we want to take advantage of it, like the first introductory quote to science and health? Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Do we want to know the truth? Do we want to be free from the harness of the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter, mortal mind, animal, vegetable, mineral, anything? I don't care if it's gold, platinum. Doesn't matter what it is. Could be the most rare earth mineral. It's all matter. It's like the man that had three sons, and he had a really choice piece of land. He had a house, beautiful home, everything in it. And in the home, he had a very comprehensive library. And he considered that a separate asset from the home because it was so special. So it comes a time in his life that he decides that he's going to divide up his assets. And so he asks each one of them individually to write down on a piece of paper what they would prefer out of the three. He didn't know what their choice would be. And he wanted it to be written down on a paper, so if there were two people that wanted the same thing, or maybe all three that wanted the same thing, he'd have to figure out what to do before he talked to them about the vote or the option that he gave them to write down. So anyway, they each wrote down the paper and they folded it over so nobody could see it. He looked at each one individually, had various expressions on his face as he was unfolding and looking at it. So he decided he would read them. And of course, the other two had no idea what the first one had said and vice versa. None of them knew what the other two wanted as their selection. So he read the first one. And the first one was a son that wanted the land. And he said, "Why did you choose the land, son?" He said, "Well, father," he said, "I figure we could have a storm. We could have flood, whatever. But chances are the land is going to suffer the least of any of the other material assets. Certainly, the right kind of a storm could wipe out the house, level it. As a matter of fact, it would destroy the library also. You could have a big flood or something, it would get the books all wet. So I figure the land is the best long-term asset. I could divide it up, sell it off, keep part of it, whatever." So the father said, "You know, that's an intelligent choice. I'm proud of you." So he opened up the second one, and that son chose the house. He said, "That's very interesting. You're not going to have any extra land around it. It's just going to be the house." He said, "Well, father," he says, "I figure that house will give me shelter and I can have parties, invite my friends over. We can have a joyful time. I'll always have a place to sleep. Come home from whatever I'm doing in the day and rest." He said, "Well, those are reasonable things to want to have. And I feel that you made a good decision. And he said, I can also always sell the house. Everybody always needs a place to live. So anyway, he opens up the third one. And the other two are on edge because they don't know whether the third one is going to ask for what they already chose or not. But the way it turns out, the third son, who happened to be the youngest, by the way, said, Father, I would like the library because I'm going to start learning as soon as you give it to me. And it's going to be mine. And I'm going to keep those books and read them and read them and read them until I've learned everything I can learn from all of them. He said, if I have a flood or a storm that wipes out what I haven't read, or wipes them all out, and so the ones I haven't read, I won't learn from them, so be it. But he said, I'm going to start learning right away. And what I learn, no one can take away from me. It's always going to be within my thought. Because I'm going to keep reading them until I practically have them memorized. And I'll be able to converse with people from around the world. No matter what their level of education is, I will be able to talk to them about something that will be of interest to them. So I'm happy with the library. I can always find a place to live. I don't care about land, but I care about knowledge. So I'm happy with that. So the father decided that all three of them had reasonable rationale for what they did. And so everybody was happy. The father was happy. No conflicts to resolve. And everyone had a logical reason for what they decided. Now, if that was really a comprehensive library, it included all of the books on Christian Science that are worthy. If he only studied those, in fact, if he only studied the textbook and Mary Baker Eddy's other writings, that would give him a real big step up in life. It really gives him a platform to stand on. Like our platform in chapter 10. 32 paragraphs. Everyone has their reason for what they do. And sometimes it's extremely hard to change a decision that we've made. And if we've made one based on matter, then what is a so-called mortal mind will resist change to the hilt. When we're thinking about man, whether it's ourselves or anyone else, and keep in mind, Mary Baker Eddy says we're going to be plenty busy taking care of our own thoughts, so don't be worried about what someone else is thinking or doing or what their station in life is. Let them work out their own salvation. You take care of your own salvation because you got plenty of work to do. Everybody does. Unless you're walking on water and you're right at the point of ascension, you've got a lot of work to do. So focus on that. And of course, if you have any dependents, you've got to give them guidance and so forth until they can be on their own to work out their own salvation. But basically, we want to be taking care of our own consciousness. That's our responsibility. So what is man? In fact, in the chapter 14 recapitulation, she has, I believe, two or three pages on the definition of man. And like I said, she's got like 1,600 or I guess, 1,500 plus, plus all the ones in the Bible. The Bible, I don't know whether I mentioned it or not, but it's got an enormous number. Just trying to look here. 2,427 references to the word man. 2,427. So you want to learn about man? You've got 1,500 plus from Mary Baker Eddy and another 24. So you got 4,000. 4,000 different references to man. By the way, it's very interesting in the glossary that right after the definition of man is the definition of matter, and right after that is the definition of mind. Isn't that interesting? That'd be worth reading those one after another and comparing them. The primary thing we have to remember is we want our life to be an example of following the golden rule. We can throw in there the Sermon on the Mount. We could throw in there the two favorite commandments of Jesus. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, and so forth. And he said the second is like unto it. And that he basically states the golden rule. So if we think about loving God and the golden rule, which really is loving God, the golden rule is loving God because God includes thinking rightly about everyone. That's what mind is. Mind certainly is not thinking incorrectly about anyone. Mind with a capital M, which is God. God doesn't even know evil, so he certainly couldn't be doing any thinking. I'm talking like he's a person. It's not a person. It's the principle. It's the qualities. In fact, I had a longtime practitioner friend, and she said, qualities, qualities, qualities. Everything is qualities. One time, I happened to be in the town where she lived, and I went there to visit. Of course, I had arranged it in advance. And when I entered, she and her husband were watching the Summer Olympics. And a gymnast was on there. And she immediately translated what she was seeing to the qualities that the gymnast was expressing. She says, look at the grace that young lady is exhibiting in her gymnastics. She immediately translates. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Mary Baker Eddy had one of her students in a conversation and didn't say what the purpose of them getting together was about, but she said, what do you think about when you walk down the street and you see a stray dog? Or a homeless person, or an accident happened. He was stunned. He didn't know how to reply. She said, are you a Christian Scientist? And after hesitating, doing a little soul searching, he said, no, Mrs. Eddy, I am not a Christian Scientist. What should we be doing if we see something like that? It could be anything. Anything that is ungodlike. Godlike is certainly not a stray dog, one without a home, without the comforts of knowing that he's going to have food to eat and shelter. Homeless person. Maybe lying down on concrete to sleep. anyone at all that appears to be lacking something of a normal comfort. I'm not talking extravagance, I'm talking about bare necessities. We should be treating our consciousness to know that man is provided for. A quotation that is on a lot of walls of churches about love. Love being the supply of everyone's need. We should know that love is taking care of that individual or that animal right now. Right now. When I go to one store in town here, well, there's several of them that have someone that is in need that is outside soliciting money. But this one in particular is very difficult to face. And I do. I mean, you know, they know me because I go over and talk to them every time. And, of course, I give them money. But I think the talking is probably more valuable to them than the money. Because I always try to think of something spiritual and say it to the daughter. The daughter is the one that's in belief of a very severe need. She basically is unconscious of what's going on around her. I don't know what the belief is called. It doesn't matter. The point is that it's not health. It's not wholeness, completeness. So I whisper something in her ear, whatever comes to me, and I assure the mother that even though it may not be apparent by visible form right now, God is here and God is caring for your daughter. That's what we need to all be doing. We have to treat our thought about anything at all that we have taken in. And that's very hard to not take it in. In fact, I haven't been successful. Otherwise, I would see that individual as whole. But we have to at least strive. We have to strive for it. Never give up. Never give up. We have to be persistent. Persistent in the truth. Not persistent in matter. Not having an ego. And we won't give up on some self-will, desire, or opinion, or whatever. Mary Baker Eddy, on a July 4th celebration, she didn't arrange it, but somebody started getting together some people to come to her home in Concord, Pleasant View. And they ended up with 2,000 people there. That was the estimated crowd. And she stands out on her balcony and tells Laura Sargent, who was one of her right-hand household people that was working on her CSD, because she said that everybody that was served their time there and advanced enough, she would give them a certification of doctorate of CS. So anyway, Laura Sargent was standing next to her. And she said, Laura, I'm looking out over here, all these people. And they all looked like they were having fun, you know, joyful and so forth. Apparently it was a beautiful day. And she said, I don't see a single Christian Scientist. Now, as you probably realize, she was so far advanced spiritually that she could sense someone's character. And here it was from a distance. You know, she was up high. don't know, the second or third floor, where she could see all 2,000 of them, and she could detect that their spirituality was missing. We want to strive for something. We need to be striving for that kind of a spiritual nature in our own thought. She didn't see a single Christian Scientist out of 2,000 people. Now that's pretty sad. She said that she felt like when there were healings, that she was very concerned that they were faith healings. It's like Jesus' disciples. That was Jesus' assessment of his disciples' healings that they had as he sent them all out, all 12 of them, out into the public to be their ministry on behalf of Jesus. That's what he felt, that it was faith healing. Mary Baker Eddy states that. You know, his healings were not miracles. His healings were because he understood the science of Christianity, which basically is love, which is that's the total of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. It's the wholeness. It means that you have already demonstrated those six, and you are now getting the benefit in the form of L-O-V-E. You're seeing it just like in that introductory poem that she said. I'll read it again here. She says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere." God is all there is. There is nothing outside of God. And we, as a reflection of the spiritual man, can be expressing the female and the male qualities. Female being things such as the love and tenderness and kindness, forgiveness and so forth, nurturing, and the male such as strength, character, courage. In other words, we're going to be complete in love only if we are expressing all of those qualities in a generic way. There is nothing that can dilute, diffuse, deflect interfere in any way with the power of truth in this treatment. Nothing can stop it. Nothing can reverse it. For the truth in this treatment is directly from God and has the entire power of omnipotence behind it. God is the only. There is nothing but God. Amen.